Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
While I was on vacation last week, I saw that there were multiple days here in Southern California where the independent system operator issued a flex alert asking people to reduce their power consumption and to also be prepared for possible rolling blackouts should there be a shortage of electricity. Those may be messages we end up getting a lot this summer. We're going to talk about the state of the grid, about our power supply, particularly as more of it is provided through renewable sources, which aren't necessarily as consistent as those provided by fossil fuels. We'll also talk about the potential for outages as a fire prevention measure when winds are high over the course of this summer. Joining us first from the Wall Street Journal, reporter covering renewable energy and utilities, Catherine Blunt. Thank you so much, Catherine, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So last week, California got the first of the year experience with the flex alert. Where do we stand at this point on the ability of the grid to be able to supply electricity?
Well, I think that there's pretty widespread expectation at this point that it's going to be a tight summer because it's looking like it's going to be a hot summer. And as many of your listeners are well aware, the state is really gripped by a historic drought right now. And that has crimped hydroelectric power supplies. And, already the grid had a tight summer last year in which the grid operator called for rolling blackouts a couple of times when demand threatened to exceed supply. And we saw some early warning signs of that last week, as you mentioned. And it looks as though it's going to be touch and go for the next couple of months. And I think that there's maybe some cautious optimism that the grid operator can avoid rolling blackouts again this year, but it's very much incumbent upon the hydro situation and some other variables that are going to strain supplies.
Last year, I believe it was in August, we had some serious problems, and much of it was because of the regional weather, that it wasn't just California or half of California that was dealing with record high temperatures, but the American West as a whole. And so that meant demand was higher in other states as well, where we might have had electricity sent to California when we're under a heat wave. And I just wonder, as climate change factors into this, is it thought that we could be seeing more of those episodes where the heat wave is not so concentrated, but much broader?
Yes, absolutely. I think that was a big part of the problem last summer, as you note. There was, because the heat wave has swept the entire West, there was less surplus to export into California to help ease the supply crunch. And I mean, climate is absolutely the big variable here. And I think that there's widespread agreement that if these sorts of heat waves, you know, persist in the coming years or get more severe, new plans are going to need to be put in place so that, you know, states across the West are not as reliant on each other for surplus power if they're, you know, encounter a situation in which they're in a squeeze.
Used to be that we were told if you can avoid using your heavier drawing machinery, washing machines or air conditioning and the like, to do that during the typical heat of the day, early afternoon period. Now that's moved into the early evening hours after sunset because of the inability of solar arrays to continue to gather power. So now we see this vulnerability later in the day. What sort of progress, if any, is being made to try and deal with that limits on storage and the problems that renewables present when it comes to consistency of electricity?
Absolutely. So the state has been working very hard to procure more battery storage capacity. These large grid-scale batteries will hold excess solar power produced during the middle of the day when production is highest, and discharge it in the evening when supplies are tight. But unfortunately, this is a slow process, and the amount of capacity needed is not going to materialize overnight. So progress is being made on that front. It's going to be a multi-year process. And then I think another effort that's underway is to increase the amount of demand response and customers' ability to shift electricity usage over the course of the day. And some of this is being done through smart devices that can automatically shift load within the home and make it so that each individual household is using less electricity when supplies are tightest. But this too is also a process that's going to take a number of years to develop in a way that's really going to help ease the challenges that the grid operator faces now.
We're talking with the Wall Street Journal reporter covering renewable energy and utilities, Catherine Blunt. Also with us, the CEO of the California Independent System Operator, Elliot Mainzer. Thank you very much for joining us again on Air Talk. How are things looking as we head into the months of July, August, and September?
Now, that's the right question. I think last week told us that we certainly have moved into a new normal. I think all of our planning, even incorporating what we learned from last summer, was still likely indicating that August and September were going to be the biggest challenging months. And here we are, literally a couple days even before summer started, seeing that kind of heat. So we are now really bracing ourselves for what is likely to be a long and very hot summer, monitoring conditions already for this upcoming week, going into the weekend where we're seeing temperatures starting to rise again. And I think, the core things we need to do right now, Catherine mentioned a number of really important issues, but, the grid is what we have right now. The generators, the supply stack is not going to change a ton between now and September. So the key thing is making sure any new resources that were scheduled to come online this summer, that we break down any barriers to getting them on the grid, particularly those batteries that are going to play a really important role after sunset. We need to coordinate very closely with the other system operators in other regions where we import power from, particularly the Pacific Northwest and the Desert Southwest, to make sure that our generation fleet inside California is as well maintained and as prepared as possible. And then I think probably the most essential lesson we learned from last summer is just the importance of communicating and providing consumers and industry with advanced notice if it looks as though we're going to be going into stress grid conditions. So last week, we put out a heat wave bulletin about a week in advance. When we trigger a flex alert, we're going to provide people with the best information we possibly can and make sure that they know those really pragmatic things that they could do. Primarily, first of all, before the stress grid conditions, primarily in the evening, folks can pre-cool their homes by lowering their thermostat. They can use major appliances like their dishwashers and clothes washers earlier in the day, close window coverings, pre-charge those electronic devices. And then when we get into that period, primarily after sunset, we're asking folks to set their thermostats to 78 degrees or higher if their health permits, avoid using any of those major appliances and turning off any unnecessary lights. And like we saw last week, when things got real hot and a bit stressed, it makes a big difference, and we really appreciate consumers leaning in to help us maintain the overall reliability of the grid.
Why are we in this place, though? What could have been done so that we wouldn't be having to go through the flex alerts and deal with the potentially significant numbers of days this summer when we're going to have to rein in our usage?
It's a fair question, and a lot of people are asking that. I think, the state agencies, the California Public Utilities Commission, the California Energy Commission, ourselves here at the ISO, I think we're all recognizing that given the pace of change of the climate, the behavior of these new resources, we really do need to accelerate our planning and procurement. Just recently, the PUC is actually heading towards a final order where they're going to potentially be ordering as much as 11,500 megawatts. That's a lot of generation of new resources to come online in the next several years. A lot of it geared towards dealing with exactly what we're finding after sunset hours to help maintain reliability. So we have some catch up to do in California. And right now, I would say everybody's just really focused to accomplish that and to maintain reliability on this path to a decarbonized grid.
Is it possible to, I don't know if there are natural gas powered plants that you could put online that perhaps have been replaced with renewables, but in times when the system gets stressed, fire them up, or is that much easier said than done?
No, it's happening. Just, you know, California is still getting roughly 40% of its generation from natural gas. And even as we transition over the coming decades to weaning ourselves off dependence on that resource, those gas plants will play an important sort of backup role in reliability. And we're going to need to, you know, to keep those generators healthy. Hopefully we're going to be using them less and less frequently. But when we have those, you know, those events where the grid gets truly stressed and our imports from other regions are limited, we're going to need them there in a backup capacity, and they're going to play that role for some time to come.
So you can fire those up comparatively quickly when the need arrives?
Yes, you can.
All right. We're talking with Elliot Mainzer, CEO of the California Independent System Operator. You were talking about additional generation coming online over the coming years. What about the ability of getting power from other sources outside of California, of course, provided those places aren't having the same kind of a heat wave that we are? Has that been beefed up at all for this summer?
A little bit. You know, the transmission system that we had last year is primarily a transmission system this year. There were some outages last summer coming in from the Pacific Northwest. There had been a big storm in the late spring that had limited the amount of import capability from the Northwest. That has been rectified for this year. So the transmission lines are in very good shape, and we have very healthy working relationships with the big utilities that run the Columbia River system. We also work closely with the utilities in the Desert Southwest. So certainly those imports are really important. And just in general, that diversity of resource access across the West, we're part of a big Western electricity market, and we're able to buy and sell. You know, we also export a lot of electricity out of California during the middle of the day. That's generally a big asset to us. But as we really lean in now to strengthen our planning, given the changes that we're seeing in the system and the climate, we're going to have to make sure that we have a healthy balance between our requirements to import from other regions and our ability to have a little bit greater self-sufficiency, particularly during stress grid conditions.
Have closures of any of the coal plants, the big plants in the Four Corners area, has that had a role in this? I don't know how much electricity we were getting from those facilities.
It's, you know, generally California's reliance on coal in general is quite small, but because we are part of a big Western electricity market, any changes in the generation stack in California, the supply of power, impacts the overall market. And certainly, as California has begun to grapple with resource supply issues, other regions of the West as well, the Desert Southwest, the Pacific Northwest, we're all having to adjust our planning and our resource procurement to deal with those changes in the coal-fired generation stack. So it is an impact, but it's not just limited to California. It impacts all of us who buy energy on the surplus market.
CEO of the California Independent System Operator at CAISO, Elliot Mainzer, is with us. Also with us from UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business, Professor Severin Bornstein. He's been a guest with us so many times over the years, and he's a member of CAISO's Board of Governors. Professor Bornstein, good to have you with us again. As you analyze what's facing us this summer, what are your thoughts of what's ahead?
Well, I think that Catherine and Elliot have summarized it pretty well. We're going to have a tight summer. We have done a lot since last year. In fact, we have 2,000 megawatts of additional storage on the grid, which is going to help a lot as the sun goes down. We have extended the life of some gas-fired power plants, which obviously is not good for climate change, but they barely ever run, as you were suggesting. They're being fired up 2 or 5% of the time when you look at the actual data. And we've really improved, and Elliot has been a leader in this, in our relations with other parts of the West, because ultimately California cannot do this alone. We need to be integrated with the rest of the Western grid in order to move to a cleaner grid in a way that maintains reliability. The sun is shining at different times and the wind is blowing at different times in Wyoming and Colorado and New Mexico than it is in California. And so greater integration is really going to be the key to making this all work, well, we use a lot more variable resources like wind and solar.
I was just thinking.
I also think that we really need to take seriously the demand side in a way that we haven't as much, and not just for residential customers, but for commercial and industrial customers. And I want to remind people of what Japan did after Fukushima. They had a Hawaiian shirt summer, and they turned thermostats up to 82 degrees in office buildings, and they told people to dress lightly. And when I suggested this back in 2001, the legislature continued to run the full air conditioning full on and wear suits and ties. If we want to show some leadership, changing those air conditioning settings and the way we dress would be a good way to do it.
What effect is the closing of Diablo Canyon, a nuclear plant in the central coast of California, going to have on this? I think it's in 2 and then 3 years that the turbines there close down. What is those reactors go offline? What is that going to mean to the overall supply?
Well, it's actually 3 and 4 years from now, okay. But it's definitely, we're going to lose 2,000 megawatts of generation when those reactors shut down. And we need to replace those. And there is a lot of planning going in right now to make sure that we have the additional supply. Some of it from, a lot of it from wind and solar, but we're going to need a lot more storage to make that work. And we're going to need demand flexibility. And we're also going to need more integration with the rest of the West. We're going to need to have power from other parts of the country. And further down the road, we're looking at other technologies. Diablo's right on the coast and has some great transmission connection and is a potential hub of a place to bring in power from offshore wind. And as you probably heard a couple weeks ago, the federal government came around and okayed some offshore wind locations, not near Diablo, but that will allow us to start building those. The Pacific Ocean is a very challenging place to build it, but that's a potentially tremendous resource as well, probably 5 or 10 years away still.
You were talking about the grid, making it more robust, the ability to ship electricity over longer distances. Is there money, do you know, in President Biden's infrastructure bill to do that? Is this considered a critical part of infrastructure that would likely be funded?
Yeah, so there's definitely money in the proposal. What actually gets through is another question, but I think that this is probably one of the less controversial parts of the infrastructure bill. So I think there is going to be funding for transmission over long distances, and I think that's a great thing. We're going to really need that. There probably is going to need to be more investment than that the infrastructure bill alone is going to be able to put forward, but I think it's a good first step. And it's a recognition that to make this clean energy grid work, we are going to have much greater integration so that we can harvest the wind and sun where they actually are and when they actually are, and move that power, which we can do instantaneously, to the places where it's most needed.
And of course, as you mentioned earlier, storage capacity, so that hopefully some new generation batteries making that more efficient, more affordable, higher capacity will come online. Are you seeing promising technology there that's being tested that shows great promise?
Well, for short-term storage, we're actually in really great shape. Lithium-ion batteries have massively come down in cost. The technology continues to improve and is really very competitive. And when you put solar together with lithium-ion batteries, you can have a very robust resource for getting through these end-of-day sunset issues. The issue we're going to have to face down the road, and particularly as we start electrifying more things and we start seeing more heating in winter demand, is what do we do when the sun doesn't shine for 3 or 4 days? That is, we need long-term storage. And the prospects for lithium-ion batteries to fill in there are not great. There are a bunch of other chemical technologies and physical technologies for storage. None of them has really gotten to the cost competitive point yet. The good news is we're probably many years away from really having that need, and the technologies are developing. And right now we're leaning a lot on lithium ion batteries, which, you know, started out in our cell phones and now are these giant batteries on the grid that can store power and are going to help us get through the sunset period. We're also going to need people to be cognizant of those tight periods and to change their consumption when they can.
Professor Bornstein, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for joining us again today.
Thanks.
From UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business, Professor Severin Bornstein, a member of the California ISO Board of Governors, also CEO of Cal ISO, Elliot Mainzer with us, and Catherine Blunt, who covers renewable energy and utilities as a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Coming up on Air Talk, I want to hear from you. If you're getting married this year or got married this year, did you delay it to have your wedding? How is it different in that we're coming out of this pandemic period? And what is the business of weddings like? I want to hear from you, for photographer, wedding planner, a florist, anything having to do with weddings, a musician. Let us know what it's like for you with 2021 weddings during this month that is historically the biggest for marriage. 866-893-KPCC. Back in 90 seconds.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.